Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Breathcast. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm going to be your breathwork coach and host, and I am so excited to introduce you to Mr. Jason Campbell. Now, for those of you that don't know, we have just launched my very first breathing app. After 7 years of playing with the breath, finally landed on an app. It's called The Breath Source. The link is down below. You can click on it now. You can get free access to it. I'm in there. Jason, the guest you're about to see, is in there. Jesse Coomer's in there. Michael Biker's in there. Ben Greenfield's in there. And there's a whole host of other breathwork instructors in the app. So click on that link. Get access to the app now. I am running a series of interviews with different breathwork instructors that are in this app with me. Now, what makes this app different is this is the first time collectively a load of breathwork instructors have come together to bring different modalities, teaching styles, flares and flavors of breathwork into one space. It's not just a load of animated bubbles. This is different breathwork instructors teaching breathwork. And we've all come together and it's absolutely beautiful. I genuinely believe this app is going to change the world. It's a one-stop shop for all things breathwork. Click the app, get the app. You're going to see me on there. This podcast is going to be in there as well. All my podcasts are going to be in there. I'm still going to be doing stuff on YouTube, but I won't be doing as many breathing exercises on YouTube now. They're going to be in the app. There's going to be, you know, a lot more of them, a lot more of me teaching, live classes, different ways to exchange and buy different things. It's so exciting. Affiliates. We've got some wonderful connections to some beautiful things like AeroFit, BrainTap. Oh my God. So everything's in the app. Click below. Jason is my guest for today, and I'm just going to read a bit. Jason is a breathwork master. He teaches meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong. He's been in a band or is in a band. He plays piano. He has Zen piano. He's done so many incredible things, and he is a big teacher of the Taoist arts. Now, I'm going to leave you just teetering on that. What is that? So, beautiful podcast with a new breath friend. I think you're going to get a lot of value from this conversation. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jason. Links are all down below for the app, and let's get the conversation started. Thank you so much. All right, Mr. Jason Campbell, thank you for coming on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, really good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get stuck in. And this is a bit of a special one because this is not only a normal podcast, a breathcast. We're also here talking about this magical thing that people might not have heard of yet called breath space, which we'll, I'm sure, get stuck into in some degree and maybe just tempt people a little bit with it. But first of all, mate, if you don't mind me asking, what can you give people a bit of a flavor about what you do? Because I can see zenpiano.com on your title. And I know there's something with breathwork going on here, but if you could share for us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, here, I'll tell you what, I'll start with my entry point. I'll start with this story. So when I was 8 years old, I had a music teacher. And my first lesson, it was at the piano. And she said to me, never, ever listen to notes. Idiots listen to notes. Masters listen to the space in between the notes. Because when you listen to a note, your mind gets cluttered and you hear nothing. When you listen to the space, the silence, or the gap, then your mind gets very clear and you hear everything. And so my introduction to music was hitting one note, gong, on the piano, and listening to that note just dissolve into nothingness and placing your attention right on that nothingness. And that was just part of the training. So I learned how to listen to space. And it wasn't until about, just under a decade or so later, when I was formally trained in meditation, and I would sit the ashram and we'd do, you know, 4 hours sitting down and just meditating, that I realized that, oh, wait a minute, I have been meditating all these years. We just didn't call it meditation. We called it deep listening. So my entry point, really, even to Zen, was through sound. Mm-hmm. But you use the sound to get to the silence. And that's what kind of started this whole journey. And that was a while. I'm 52 now. So that was, I guess that'd be 44 years ago.
Whoa, you're 52 as well. I had no idea. You look much younger than that.
Well, thank you.
Clearly the Zen meditations is doing wonders. Well, so what is I've heard the word Zen, but I won't be able to. If you said to me, what does Zen mean? I've got no idea. I'd say it's like peaceful, but I don't know what the root of that word
Yeah,
is.
well, okay. So since I told a childhood story, I'll tell another childhood story. I asked
Yes,
when I was a
please.
teenager, I asked my martial art instructor, what is Zen? You know, I just, okay, what is Zen? He looked at me, he smiled, and sidekicked me. And he hit me hard. I mean, he cracked me right in the gut. I went flying across the room. I hit the wall. I'm laying there down. He smiles and walks away, doesn't say a word. And so he actually answered my question. And so what is Zen? Well, Zen ultimately is presence, because in that moment being sidekicked, flying throughout the practice room, there was no past, there was no future, there was only now. I think I had a word for it. Ah! Something like that. That was the Zen word in the moment. Oh,
that's well, how can I say that? I'll tell you what, I look forward to the day somebody comes up to me and says, Mike, what does Zen mean? Wow. Okay, so you got the message loud and clear then. Bloody
right.
Hell.
That was also a different time period. That was in the 80s.
Of course, you can't
back
do
when you
that
did that, those type of things.
Can you imagine? Bloody hell. But you got the message. That's really interesting. So how would you describe that to somebody now then, if somebody asks you? So is it just being present? Is it the pure,
yeah, and you know, and presence is a funny thing. There's I think there's a lot of maybe I say misconceptions of what does present mean, because it's real simple. We have between 50,000 and 80,000 thoughts a day. Most of those thoughts are the same thoughts we had yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a skipped record that we get on this loop. I mean, many thoughts that we have are the thoughts that remain from childhood that are just replaying and replaying. So the majority of our thoughts we don't need. And when you come into presence, you see, there's a beautiful teaching in the word human being, because there's the human part, and the human part is very different when you and I were eight. The being part is the eternal. That's the eternal I am. That's the observer. It's that which watches your thoughts. So we have a human and we have a being, and that part doesn't change. The observer is the same when you were eight. Mm. And so when you start to, the discipline, there's a lot of disciplines and there's many paths up the mountain. There's many ways to experience Zen. It doesn't matter how you get there. And when you watch your thoughts and you observe your thoughts, and then you start to create a gap or a space in between your thoughts, and you have no inner dialogue, well, you become like fiercely alert, you become fiercely present, and you experience a moment of Zen. Mm-hmm. Now, usually this moment is fleeting because the thoughts come back in, and, you know, we'll take a, you know, someone who starts meditation and they'll be practicing some of the exercises, you know, just the sitting exercises, and we'll have a moment of not thinking. But then when you realize you're having a moment of not thinking, you lose it because the thinking mind comes in. Hey, wow, that's so cool. Wow, I'm not thinking. I really did it. I'm such a Zen master. I'm so cool. Well, good job, but you just lost it when that starts to come in. So a lot of the the mastery is in the ability, can you turn off the thinking mind? Like, can you stop that incessant stream of thinking? And when you're able to do that and you develop that off switch, an entire world of, let's say, creativity comes in. You know, it literally changes your chemical makeup, like the chemicals that your brain produces when you come into that state. But you also get very, very creative. You get open to new ideas. And that's, that's one of my little techniques of composing. I will just sit at the piano and I'll sit there with nothing. I'll sit on my hands and just close my eyes and go to the place of nothing and wait, and just wait for an idea to come. And it always comes. Sometimes it comes quickly, sometimes it takes a while, but it's always there when you drop into the place of nothing. There's an old Taoist riddle that says, what's the closest number to infinity? And the answer is zero. And how do you get to the place of everything, go to the place of nothing? If you're familiar with the yin-yang symbol, there's a little dollop of black and white and white and black, and that's what that means. When something goes so extreme, it flips. For example, something is so cold it burns you. Mm-hmm. It goes to one extreme, then it flips. Or I live out here in Phoenix, and it gets really hot. in July, it's very hot. It's 110 degrees. And so it can be so hot and so yang that you want to fall asleep. You go yin. Or there can be a full moon, which is so yin, it's one in the morning, but you're just completely wide awake, which is completely yang. So that's when you have the little dollop. And so how do you get to the place of where all ideas and all creativity exists? You go to the place of nothing.
Hey guys, real quick, if you're enjoying this conversation so far, maybe you want to click on the link below and come and join us on The Breath Source. The link is down below. You can get started on Apple and Android. All the links are down there. Click one link, get started. You might notice that at some points in these conversations, I refer to it as The Breath Space. Ignore that. We were playing with different names last year. I'm so glad we landed on The Breath Source. So The Breath Source link is down below. I will see you on it. Back on with the conversation. Cheers.
I love that. Where does boredom sit in all of that then? And is because boredom tends to have like a negative connotation to it. But I feel like, and this is not a new conversation, let's be honest, we're all talking about this now, or I feel we are, about being addicted to kind of tech and mobile phones. And we're never bored anymore. We never have the silence. So where does the boredom bit sit in all of this?
Yeah, boredom is a funny concept. But see, there was a study a few years ago that was done. I think Microsoft did it. It was about the attention span. And it was something like the human attention span in the last decade went from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. Mm. And, you know, the punchline is a goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds. So good job. Good job, team. We did it. We have a less attention span of a goldfish. And it's very obvious why. I don't think we need a study to say why. It's the tech. It's the bleeping. I read this other study, and I don't know how they come up with these studies, but this intuitively makes sense, so I'll quote it. That the average person now loses patience waiting for something after 17 seconds.
Whoa.
And that's it's the phone. It's you click a button on the phone, and the phone doesn't do what you want, and then you start to get upset because the phone is not doing what you want. And so it's the smartphone is very, very smart, but it doesn't make us smart. In some ways, it makes us dumb. Yeah. It makes us not able to function, or your head is buried in the phone and you're not paying attention to what's going on. And, you know, I have the latest phone, and I use my phone. So I'm certainly not saying don't use a phone, but you want to make sure or that you own the tech and the tech doesn't own you, because all that can do is just make in between your ears get more turbid, and you don't get that silence because you get the constant churn. The tech makes it hard to rest in the now with no past and no future. It's this constant stimulation, and you just have to be very, very careful of that. You can have the stimulation and get all the information and do it. My suggestion and what we take our members through is the transformation of coming into the now and being still and stopping your thoughts and going inward. And then you can pick up your tech afterwards. It's kind of like you can have your cake and eat it too, but you don't want to be 24/7 can get very unhealthy. I don't know people that use the tech all the time that are happy.
Yeah.
It's usually high stress and high strung.
I was, are you familiar with Breath, the book by James Nestor? I don't know if you've come across.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That. Okay. So I was lucky enough to be on his retreat in Costa Rica a few months ago. And he was saying, I talk to all the top CEOs in Silicon Valley. And he goes, most of them won't let their children anywhere near a device. And these are the people that help him make it. And he goes, that just says a lot about these devices. And I was like, whoa, that's a big one. So I think you're right. It's not about stopping it completely. But for me, it's like, how do you harness that tool? I made a little 2-day mini retreat for myself a couple of months ago, where I just hired an Airbnb down the road, and there was no tech for 2 days. And all I did was journal and color. I colored in mandalas and journaled. And the first few hours were great. And then it got really tough. And my brain was like freaking out. I needed a distraction, needed like Netflix or something. And I kind of was so desperate, but I managed to get through that period. And then the next morning, I just woke up, and I was one of the calmest states I can remember, really, because my brain kind of freaked out, and then it kind of calmed down. And then I had to come back to the real world. But I still remember that was a really powerful experience. But now I'm back on my phone all the time, so I need to find that balance or that zen. Interesting stuff. So Jason,
that's why we use the mountain out here. We have 400 acres that we do our training in, and we have it's called the Gray Wolf Mountain.
Ooh.
And part of going up. Part of the transformation is getting there, meaning getting to the mountain. Because if you look historically, where did the historical figures go to find God? Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't go to a skyscraper. They went to the mountain. And so why the mountain? Does God only exist on a mountain? Well, of course not. That's absurd. That's like a fish looking for water. Looking for God is like a fish looking for water. So it has more the ability to see it than actually going finding it and feeling it. However, by the time you make the journey, and the journey up there clears your head, it clears your body. It works out like a lot of the crap out of your body and the crap out of your mind. Mm-hmm. So by the time you get there, you're actually clear enough that you can hear something, mm-hmm. and that you can come into your own. And so that's why part of the journey is you go up the mountain, and then up the mountain is then that's when you do the training and you do the breath work and you do all the cultivation is getting there. So it's more about your prep. Yeah. And that's why we do it. And there's no Netflix. You don't get at the top, you get cell phone service, unfortunately, because you go up higher, you can get it. But down at the base, you don't really get any service. And what are you going to do? Watch a movie?
Yeah.
Or be on your phone? You can't be on a phone. You have to be completely present walking up there. You do one step, one step, one step. And it's really, really winds up being a powerful, not just physical experience. It winds up being a spiritual experience. Yeah.
No, that's nice. You reminded me of like the start of the Batman film with Christian Bale, where he has to get a blue flower and climb the mountain. Do you remember? I
always... Yeah, right.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I've only done a couple of mountains in my life, but each time, yeah. I've had this conversation before. There's like a filtering experience I find with mountains. Like you don't get your average idiots going up mountains. Is it like it filters them out, so you tend to find people that want that experience are there, you know? So suddenly as you're climbing the mountain, you end up with like good people. Well, I found that to be the case anyway, and so you tend to find like a bit of a tribe of really nice people on the mountain, whereas in England we don't say hello to each other very often. It's quite a weird thing in the street, but on the mountain you'd be crossing paths. Oh, everyone's good morning. Fun, right? Yeah, everyone's open. So yeah, they're nice. So what's it called? Did you say Grey Wolf Mountain?
Yeah, that's the name of a cool mountain, yeah. That I mean, and that's our name, and where that comes from is because you have the white wolf and you have the dark wolf. It's the metaphor.
Oh, I like that.
You have yin and yang.
Yeah,
and you know the dark wolf is predatorial, and but strong and predatorial. Okay, the white wolf can be weak and righteous, and you don't want to be either. You don't want to be. You have 1 foot in the light, 1 foot in the dark, and that's the gray. And that's balance. The gray wolf.
I like that.
Nice. So it's balancing the opposing forces of yin and yang, yeah, and understanding both. Because you can't see, when you say yin and yang is just a metaphor for opposites. And if you, happy can't exist without its opposite. If you say, oh, all I want to do is be happy, well, that's impossible. Because if you're happy all the time, you're never happy. If everything is blue, nothing is blue. Mm-hmm. So the only reason blue exists is because there's something to compare it to. And so to compare whatever word we want to use for the opposite of happy, pick a word that creates happiness. Mm. So you can't just be all have, you know, the higher, let's call it the high emotions and dark emotions. Okay. Let's oversimplify emotions. You can't just have one. It's impossible. And so that's why you actually need a little bit of dark. I mean, ultimately, see, different emotions hang out in different organs. The Taoists figured this out thousands of years ago, that anger hangs out in the liver, shock hangs out in the heart, grief hangs out in the lungs, fear hangs out in the kidneys, and stress and worry hang out in the stomach and spleen. And so we have this vibrational frequency that circles, you know, around, and the metaphor we use is the five elements. We call it wood, fire, earth, metal, water. Not literal wood, literal fire, but it's a metaphor for the repeating pattern of five. Mm. And so if you have a liver, you're going to experience a little bit of anger, at least a dollop of anger. If you have a lungs, and if you live long enough, you're going to experience some grief, in grief of loss, in et cetera. So when we get into emotional mastery is not having any emotions. That's absurd. And I'm just, or I'm just happy all the time because I mastered my emotions. Well, good luck with that. Yeah. Emotional masteries is looking at emotions as flow through. So they flow through you. So for example, I was taught when I was a kid that this was the metaphor, and go with me on this. This is not my shirt. It's the shirt I wear. okay, this is not my microphone, it's the microphone I use, or the microphone I speak into. This is not my car, it's the car I drive. Now, I'm not talking legal viewpoint. Sure, legally I own my car and my microphone and my shirt, fine. But I mean spiritual viewpoint. It's, you don't own anything, because at some point, me and this microphone are going to part ways. Yeah. Me and this shirt are going to part ways. We all suffer from impermanence. And at some point, all things part. I mean, you can take this another step, and you could even say, hey, actually, it's not my body. It's the body I live in. Mm-hmm. Because you have the eternal consciousness. It's a little dollop that gets to hang out in this big bag of bones and flesh and levers, pulleys, a circuit board, you know, fluids. And we get issued this big meat suit. Yeah. And with a very strange term, it's a lease with an unknown expiration date. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even come with a manual. If you really think about it, it's very weird terms that we have showing up in life. And we get this thing showed up. But if you say, it's not my body, it's the body I live in, there's a little bit of space. Okay, so how does this apply to emotions? I'm not angry. I have anger energy running through me. Mm-hmm. Because if you experience anger, but I'm so angry. Well, if you say I'm angry, you just identified with an emotion. You identified with, actually, the color of anger is green. There's a vibrational frequency of anger. That's all it is. It's an energy that runs through you. Mm-hmm. But if you say, hey, I got this anger energy running through me. Now there's a little space between you and the energy. And that little tiny crack, that little tiny gap can change everything. It can change from a reaction to a response. And it's different if you react or if you respond. And so that's just part of the emotional mastery, is just you have that little gap. And when you're in the moment, the hardest thing is just remembering it. Because yeah. It doesn't feel like it. It can be completely overwhelming. You can have your whole body filled with rage energy, or again, I'm just using anger or rage as an example. Pick an energy. And it's hard to remember that, which really ultimately comes back to the breath practices. Mm-hmm. If you're practicing the breath practices, is one of the things that it does, one of the many things the breath work does, is it helps to create a little bit of space, mm-hmm. a little bit of space in the thoughts, especially if you do some of the like intermittent hypoxia, where you exhale completely and you just hold the exhalation and you hold to the point where your lizard brain starts to kick in and say, hey, man, what are you doing to me? Well, you're going to die. What are you doing? You need some air. What are you doing? You know, and it starts getting louder and louder, and maybe like the little panic.
Yeah.
Well, lizard brain is actually your best friend, but it doesn't mean you always listen. It doesn't mean it always gives you good advice. Your best friend doesn't always give you good advice. So you don't always listen to that. But when you can calm that and calm that lizard brain and just tune it down, or just not even listen to it, that strengthens your entire nervous system. And it creates a little bit of space. So the next time you do have, you know, a bunch of anger type energy running through you, it becomes a little easier to remember.
Yeah. Do you know, I've just experienced that very recently in August. So, you know, just a month ago, I was doing my first time ever did some free diving in Greece.
Cool.
I've never done it before, but I was invited out. And the cool thing was what they call static apnea, where you're face down in a swimming pool and you're trying to hold your breath as long as you can. And great the way you've just said that, because you know, you hold your breath and then you get that panic and or urgency, you take a breath in. But with the static apnea, what they're trying to train you to do there is, how long can you hold your breath for? And so you're going through this period of contractions with the diaphragm and the brain really going, like you said, come on dude, what are you doing, man? You need to get out. And the way the freediving instructor explained it to me was, and the lady that was also with him, that's also a professional freediver, was like, they said, this is about 70% psychological what you're going through here. And so your body can hold longer, but you've got to kind of get control. And so for me, it was this moment of relaxation. And interestingly, the guy who was training us, he set the world record for breath holds. He did 10 minutes about 10 hours ago. And he said, it's about happy thoughts for him. So it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on that. He says he's tried it. He's tried different emotions. But for him, when he thinks about happy thoughts, specifically happy, so not gratitude, not joy, but he said happy, he would get the longest breath holds. And I don't know if that links back to anything you're talking about, but I found that fascinating.
Yeah, he found his center is what he did. And in his case, it was like the happy thought where you can just come right into his center. And it's pretty remarkable. 10 minutes is pretty impressive.
Ridiculous. So what does your day job look like? What are you doing? So there's Zen piano, you've got people going up mountains from what I can hear. So give me a flavor. I mean, I'm sure every day is different, but just give me some idea of what your organization does.
Well, some of the projects, I'll start with the music.
Yeah.
Because I have the Zen piano, we have Zen Wellness. And then we have all of the programs within Zen Wellness. We have the mountain. We have the town. We own a town out here. That's a whole other fun story. I'm actually the sheriff of Cleeter, Arizona. And so with a group of us, we own a ghost town.
Wow.
And that it's on the same energetic meridian as the mountain. It's there a few miles away, but it's on the same meridian out here. We're out here in the Arizona desert. There's lots of interesting things out here.
Cool.
And what we do is we take in Zen Wellness, we take our members through transformation. I mean, we have our live events that we do and obviously certifications and all of that. And then we also have ongoing, lead ongoing breath work. And we do that live and we do that on Zoom. So it's kind of a hybrid between, you know, you can do online, but if you want to show up for some of the events and show up for some of the stuff, we do that. But it's not just the breath work. It's the... See, there's ultimately three types of meditation. So let's even back up here. There's an old concept called the three treasures. If you Google the three treasures, once you get past all like the Pirates of the Caribbean, a few pages of that, you'll get a concept called Jing, Qi, and Shun. And it doesn't matter if you remember the words, but let's remember the meaning. That we're made up of three things. We're made up of matter, energy, and consciousness. And so the matter is everything you can see, touch, and feel. The energy is the chi, the breath, the emotions. You can't hold anger in your hands. You can't, you know, actually see it and touch it and put it in a box, but it's very real. It does exist. That's the chi. That's the energy. And then the shun is the consciousness, the thoughts. And so an easy analogy, if we just think H2O, we have solid, liquid, vapor, ice, water, and mist. And so the same... like structure can show up three different ways. Well, that's how we show up. So ultimately, there's three types of meditation. There's sitting, standing, and moving meditation. Because normally when we think of meditation, you think of the sitting meditation. But no, there's a whole series of standing meditations and then a whole series of moving meditations. And the moving meditation, you coordinate breath, movement, and intention. So you put the three together. And then that all goes into the Oriental medicine, and we teach all the Taoist medicine and all the five elements and the meridians and how everything, like, basically, if you look at the body, there's a bunch of levers, pulleys, and a circuit board. You know, if you just start to know the circuit board, it's not really that complicated. But where are the circuits? Where are the points? See, if you, like in your room, in my room, there's complex wiring going on behind the walls. Okay, if you really want to learn the wiring, you can learn the wiring, but it's not really necessary. What you need to know is you do need to know how to turn on the light. Like, you know how to flip the switch. You got to know how to plug something in, and probably that's about it, what you need to know. Well, it's the same here. If you understand the circuitry of the body, you don't need to know everything, but just know some of the points. Mm-hmm. Just know some of the basics, because different times of the day, there's different high tides of energy that goes, and they figured this out thousands of years ago, and it's all been validated with modern science equipment. That's some of the cool stuff about this. And so if you just know like the points between 5 and 7 a.m., your fingertip is high tide. And that helps with elimination, 5 and 7 a.m. So at 5 and 7 a.m., if you just rub your fingertip, your first finger, and you just like this here, it's a little past 7 a.m. here. But then that's just one example, and there's 12 of those that go throughout that. And that's some of the Oriental and Eastern medicine that we teach. So we teach the whole system. I mean, we also, those that get into it, we teach sword training as well. We have a whole system of the, ultimately, the reason you practice the sword, I mean, it's a martial skill, but we say you use the sword to polish your soul, is the saying. In the beginning level of swordsmanship, you learn to cut one into two. And of course, it's kind of obvious. Someone throws an apple at you, you cut it with a sword. Okay, but the highest level of sword, you cut two into one. And you think, how's, wait a minute, work? how do you cut two into one? That doesn't make any sense. Well, it's a metaphor for becoming whole, and you make something whole. So it actually flips with the sword. So entry-level sword, cut one into two. Sword mastery, you cut two into one. Mm-hmm. And it's using the sword to polish the soul. is the saying. And so that's the Zen wellness. I'm trying to answer your question. I know I'm bouncing around.
This is great.
I was trained in all the musical arts as a child. I went to music school, and I remember when I was 19, I remember having the realization that it's all the same. Actually, I remember where I was when this hit me. This hit me like a lightning bolt. And I was going to Berklee Music College in Boston. This was in the 80s, and I was just in the hallway. I was just walking in the hallway and a lightning bolt struck me. And it's, and what do I mean by it's all the same? The music, the martial arts, the medicine, the yoga, the tai chi, the breath work, whether you're swinging a sword or conducting an orchestra, whether you're, playing a guitar or doing breath work, ultimately, it's all the same. And if you even get into some of the numerology of the medicine and the Taoist numerology, it all is the same of music. Like, it's like the language is exactly the same of sound and sound acoustics. And I remember when that hit me, it's like, oh wow, these are just different tools of skillful means. And oh wow, it's all the same. Now, I had no idea where that was going to lead me, because I worked in music for a while, and then I wound up taking 20 years off of music to do all my Zen studies and my cultivation and to build an organization and to raise a family and to, do all that stuff. And then I came back, in my early 40s is when I came back to music. And I said, with the kind of the understanding of, okay, I know this language, I know the music language, I know the Taoist language, I know them both. I have mastery over both subjects. And now let's put them together and let's use the music to translate all this old wisdom and all this ancient wisdom. And even when I started the project, I didn't really know where it was going to go. I just know, okay, let's start with the five elements, and let's teach the five elements through music, and let's create soundtracks that our members can move to, that they like, that has a bell every 4 seconds. You can breathe at the bell or you do a movement. And so it keeps everything in time, but the energy of the music describes the five elements. And so, for example, wood, fire, earth, metal, water, it's the repeating pattern, not literal wood, literal fire. So one example of the pattern is you have sprouting, flowering, fruiting, falling, rotting. And that's the five. You can look out your window and you can see that pattern. And so in music, like if you're going to say something, what's a wood type element music? Well, it's green, it's naive, it sprouts. The melody goes up, it usually shoots up. Fire is a little crazier. Fire goes up and goes to the side and it disperses. Earth is flat and sweet. If you listen to my five element albums, usually the earth song is the prettiest. It's the most melodic and it always returns to center. Metal splits. It drops down. It's a little cutting the energy with a little tiny bit of grief, and then water flows and flows downward. And so the water themes are very, very mature, and the whole theme makes sense, whereas the wood themes are sometimes a little immature. Sometimes they interrupt each other, almost like an interrupting teenager. It's a little naive. It's a little green, those themes. And that's just all in a musical language. It's not in a verbal language. I've done over 100 albums. I only did one album in English. I did one album with words. Everything else is either just music or mantra. But then we take a mantra, like you take a famous mantra like Om Mani Padme Hum, which is a Buddhist mantra. And well, what does that mantra look like from a wood viewpoint? What does that mantra look like from a fire viewpoint? What does that look like from an earth viewpoint, etc.? And that was the series of albums. And then one of my projects now, I am in a series of, I don't know if you're familiar with the I Ching, I-C-H-I-N-G. It's a 6,000-year-old language of symbols. It's a Taoist language. And it is a wisdom teaching that's within the symbols, because you have these different symbols and then there's a translation with it. And so the Zen Piano brand is a translation of the I Ching. And so I take each a symbol with the variations, and then I translate that symbol into a solo piano, into a little 3-minute segment. And if you don't want to know the teachings and care about the study, all you need to do with Zen Piano is listen to the space, because there's space in the music, and the space in the music creates space in your head. And I have Zen Piano for sleep, we have Zen Piano for study, for focus, that does like the brain entrainment with the brain energy. I actually have Zen Piano speakers for pets. You put it on you leave your pet, you know, your pet comes, you come home, your pet's a little happier. It was recorded. My dog sits under the piano when I record. That's a little secret in piano. With the grand piano, the best seat in the house is underneath the piano, by the way. And my dog figured that out. And so she just goes under there and she just sits, and I'll record an entire album and she doesn't move.
Oh, that's lovely.
She sits right underneath the piano. Yeah. So those are some of the projects. We should talk about breath space, but I'm also involved. I'm a music director of a VR company. We're in virtual reality. Oh. And actually, we have the first breathing course in virtual reality.
Oh, and that's cool.
It's just coming out now. The name of the app is Retreat. Uh-huh. If you have a VR headset, highly recommend it. Retreat is like Masterclass for VR, where there's just some really, really cool teachers. And I have a breath and meditation course that we did in VR. And also I'm the music director of the company, so I write all the music for them. And then I have a bunch of projects. We train like a professional sports team. We do the breathing exercises out here. I work with a sleep company. I write all the sleep music for them. There's an app called Focus It Will, which is some of the focus music, which is the brain entrainment. See, focus music is very different than meditation music. If you get into the frequency and the vibration and what part of the brain that you're trying to stimulate, very, very different coming into focus or dropping into nothing. They're miles apart. I mean, it's very subtle, obviously, but if you really get into the science of it and how to put music and how to score it, they're miles apart.
I need to pick your brains for hours at some point about all this. This is fascinating stuff to me. Is binaural beats a real thing? Is there any evidence that they work?
Yeah. I think most of the binaural. Okay, so I'll give you a real flyover of binaural beats. If you, the idea there, it's kind of like, are you familiar with the temple bell? You ever hear the temple bell? You hit a temple bell and it rings and it goes, like that.
Ding. Yeah,
it's like they're slightly out of tune from each other on purpose.
Okay.
And they create like a dissonance. It's a nice dissonance. And the idea of a temple bell is it's you listen to that dissonance dropping into nothing. So there's a whole teaching in the temple bell. But what binaural beats does is you have a slightly different tone in each ear. Like one would be toned to, you know, 267 beats per second, which would be a C. In the other ear, it's 270. So it's slightly off. And the effect, it's two different notes, but the effect in the brain is you get that. And if it's well done, if you have a good composer doing it, somebody that knows what they're doing, they'll adjust the frequency to hit the different brain waves, because we have, you know, beta, gamma, et cetera. We have the different brain waves, and they each have a frequency. I'm actually having a whole other project in VR that we're doing that.
Cool.
In VR, we're taking the different parts of the brain and which one do we want to stimulate? Oh. And then the music is written around that. Now, the challenge of it is A, knowing the science, and then B, making it interesting musically. Because if it's all science, then it's boring. If you who just wants to listen to a beat vibrating?
Yeah.
You need a creative composer or somebody that can be real creative and make it enjoyable, make it interesting, and almost trick you so you don't even know what's going on. That's the idea, because you don't want to know what's going on. You just want to use it to help focus you or whatever your intention is.
Yeah. Cool, man. Before we go into breath space, I just want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago. And if you can give me just a bit more info, lungs and grief. What's going on there?
So here, so we go back to what I said: matter, energy, consciousness. Uh-huh. And the energy is like the water, right? Solid, liquid, vapor. So the energy, the chi. So if we look at all emotion, it's an oversimplification of, you know, all things water. They just go into this category, you know, they call it the water, the chi category, and it's emotions. But within that, if we diagnose it further, well, there's a lot of different types of emotions and we can give it different names. Now, what they did thousands of years ago, they just, you know, five bright and five dark. Let's just divide it into five for five elements. Nowadays, you can read charts, the 86 different emotions, and there's more, but that really just goes into how deep do you want to diagnose it. You can do flyover and call it five, or go a little bit deeper. So this was just the flyover.
Yeah.
So when we say wood, fire, earth, metal, water, when you start to see things in five, in this pattern of five, it's like seeing the matrix. because you start to see all things, and then you start to see everything in five, and you just start to see things in terms of pattern, because there's a repeating pattern of five. And so grief belongs, the word we use is metal element, and it hangs out in the lungs. And what do you do when you cut grief? Okay, so again, this, I'm giving flyover here. We can go into much more detail, but I'm trying to be really simple for a podcast. So how do you, if you have so much metal element, which is an analogy or a metaphor for grief, how do we drop down metal? Well, if you look at a chart, the five element chart, the little secret is you go back to, and so it'd be fire. Fire melts metal. What does that mean? Well, if you have grief, you want to burn grief out of your system. So when you're going through grief, and part of grief, if you live long enough, you're going to experience grief. I was asked on a podcast, I don't know, this was last year, someone said to me, hey, what happens when you die? And I said, well, I know exactly what happens when you die. They got silent. And I said, the people that loved you get very sad. It wasn't the answer they wanted or was expecting. I said, but I thought you were a Zen master. I said, yeah, but I'm not a dead Zen master. And so you'll experience grief. Mm-hmm. And so how do you get rid of it? You burn it out of you. What does that mean practically? You sweat. And you do if you can do intense physical activity that makes you sweat, or take a sauna, or take a bath, or eat hot foods. Mm-hmm. Laughter belongs to the fire element. So there's some cultures that at a funeral, they laugh.
Yeah.
And they joke. And you think, wait a minute, maybe that's insensitive. No, it's medicinal. Yeah. Actually. And so if you have grief, go watch a stupid, funny movie, something that just makes you laugh. And so, and also the breath belongs to metal because that's the lungs. Mm. And so if you say, how do you cut anger? So if anger belongs to wood, which is green, the color of anger is green. The guy who wrote The Hulk got it right. It's not red.
That's interesting.
Chalk is red. Yeah. So green is anger. If you have so much anger, how do we cut anger? Well, you go back to in the chart, which is metal. Metal is breath. And I remember when I was a kid, my mom said to me, hey, when you get angry, take 10 deep breaths. Well, mom was teaching me the five elements. Mom didn't know the five element reference, but mom was right.
Yeah.
Mom was also right when mom said, hey, you're going to worry yourself sick.
Yeah.
You know, you'll worry yourself an ulcer. Yeah, worry hangs out in the stomach. And that's the energy there. So a little simple five element flyover, you can quickly diagnose and help regulate your emotions. Mm-hmm. And the other, okay, so metal creates water. That's why one of the reasons we cry when we have grief. Mm-hmm. We have tears. So it's a cycle of creation and then a cycle of regulating if we think the five elements. But even the word five elements can get confusing, because when we think elements, we were all taught the periodic chart and the periodic table in high school.
Yeah.
And you think elements, there's more than five. There's over 100 now. They keep adding them to the chart. I don't know what it's at right now. So maybe even a better word would be the five attributes, or the repeating pattern of five that we see. Mm. So it gets a little confusing.
It's the whole heat thing is very interesting with grief. And I'll tell you what, it's fascinating, because it's the 9th of September right now, and it's 24 hours basically since our queen died. And
yes.
I'm not really a monarchist, but there is a collective air of grief around this country today, and it's palpable. You can taste it. And you put the radio on, the music's different, the way the host's talking is different, the way that the people that are calling in is different. It's fascinating to observe this collective grief, which I had no idea was possible. And it's the whole country is just focused on this one thing. But heat as well. That's really interesting. Yeah. So sauna, spicy foods, and laughter. Yeah. I'm half Irish and half Italian. And the Italian funerals are a very somber affair. You wear black for a year, and you don't joke. The Irish ones are, from what I've seen on TV, same as what I've seen in real life, which is you get drunk and you have a good time. And those two don't mesh. So I remember my Italian family were a little bit upset with what the Irish were doing at an Irish funeral. But I like the Irish one better, because everyone's having a good time and it's a celebration. But interesting.
Celebration of life. Because both, you can take different viewpoints. Okay, we have to mourn, we have to grieve, or we can celebrate. and everyone comes up with a different construct of how to really how to deal with impermanence and how to deal to deal with loss. I mean, I'm out here in the desert out in Arizona, so I get a little feel for what's going on in your country right now, but I don't fully have my thumb on the pulse of it. But it makes sense that, that there's this whole collective grieving. It's like a weight. Metal is heavy. See, it's also there's metal, because if we also take the five elements, let's look at life phases. Let's look at the seasons of life from a five element viewpoint. So if we just divide it into five, and let's, I'm going to go Taoist here. I'm going to say 108 years. Most don't make it 108 years, but go with me here with the metaphor. The springtime is age 0 to 8. We call that the wood element. That's the springtime of life where everything is sprouting and everything is growing and growing so fast and moving. You know, a two-year-old, you look at him, you don't see a two-year-old for 3 days. You look at him, they're completely different. Like their whole face can look different and everything can grow because it's sprouting. Then you have the what's called the flowering phase or the early summer. We call it fire element. That's age 8 and it goes up to 33. It's a 25-year phase. And I like to call that phase, look at me, what I'm going to be. And that's when you're coming into your power of that phase. And then 33 to 58, the other phases are all in 25 years. That's the earth phase. That's when things level out. That's when, well, a lot of times you do a lot of your life work in that phase. And by 33, you've kind of come into your power. You tend to know who you are around 33, 23, you don't really know who you are now, but it takes the early 30s. And a lot of times you go through a big life change right around 33. Now it's a season change. It's not on the day on your 33rd birthday, but in your early 30s, sometimes you experience this complete reorganization of your life. And sometimes it's deliberate, sometimes it's not. And it's a season change. Okay, now that's earth. Now, here's the interesting thing about earth. Earth element is flat. Wood and fire go upward. So when you're in your 20s, or even, you know, as a teenager, you're generally going to get stronger no matter what you do. Like your body is going to be okay. And you can even in your 20s get away with, you know, eating lousy foods and not really taking care of yourself. You can get away with it. You start hitting your 30s at age right around 33, it becomes much harder to do that because everything flattens out. It's the earth element. And that is the, you know, that's really when you come into mastery in that phase. Now, here's the interesting thing. At the next phase at age 58, we call that metal. That's the fall. It goes to age 83. And the fall is the harvest. There's a lot of reaping what you sow, but things get heavy. Things get metal, things get heavy, things fall because it's harder to, it's the fall. That's the season is the fall, the autumn, everything falls and it's harder to hold things up. Your skin falls, your organs fall, people fall, people around you start dying. A lot of old relationships, things just start falling because it's the autumn and you got to do a lot more work to hold yourself up because things are heavier. Once you hit your 50s, that's the phase of life I'm preparing for. I'm getting real close to the 58. And you just have to have the strength and the tools and everything to hold things up because it's the amount of time you have to spend to keep your body strong goes up. The other teaching we like to say in the metal element is it's a cutting element. And it's very important when you start to hit your like mid to late 50s, you got to cut everything that doesn't serve you. Otherwise, it will weigh you down. And whether that's stuff, but maybe you have too many things. Maybe it's relationships. Maybe it's just stuff in your head, like unwanted thought patterns or unwanted looping thoughts. You just have to ruthlessly start cutting. And then the final phase is age 83 to 108. We call that the water element or the winter or the reflective time. And really that's preparation for death and all of eternity. And ultimately the teaching there is you want to give away everything. Give away everything you know. See if you can do it in that phase. I mean, obviously you give away your stuff. But more than your stuff is see if you can give away your wisdom.
I really like that. You know, I was 34 when I got divorced and found breathwork. And complete life change at that point to where I am now. And yeah, trying to get into the mastery phase now of all of that. That's fascinating. Yeah. Most people don't get into that last phase, do they? Sadly, they seem to. The average age life expectancy is like 79 or 81, isn't it? So we need to get into that last water phase. That sounds like a nice place to be.
Well, in this country, so many people spend the last 20 years of their life dying.
Yeah.
And so it's a slow decline. Yeah. You know, it's kind of sad. Because I look at retirement, there's different ways of looking at retirement. I think of retirement as death and all of eternity. Mm-hmm. That to me is retirement. Now, there's the economic retirement when you say, okay, you know, I don't have to work a job that I don't like because I have my finances together. That's actually part of entrepreneurial success. However you get there, whether you get there with the business, with the pension, with the real estate, I mean, whatever you do, that's certainly a good thing. But in this country, this is an old stat, but it was the average man dies like 2 years after retirement.
Yeah.
And because you got to have some type of purpose, some type of focus. Because if you're not growing, you're dying. Nature says that. And, you know, ultimately, we like to say you want to give more than you take. Energetically, you want to give more than you take. When you're taking more than you give energetically, you become into problems. Mm-hmm. And nature doesn't like that. Nature doesn't support that. Mm-hmm. All things in nature. So you want to give more than what you take.
Fascinating. Like that. Yeah, because too much energy is not a good thing either, is it? Yeah, you need to give that back again. I've just recently got into the interesting world of grounding, or what might be known as earthing, and just touching the planet more, and all the problems associated with us being disconnected. We say, don't we? We're disconnected, but it actually is real. We are disconnected from the planet.
Well, the great analogy with that is what astronauts go through.
Oh, tell me.
When you don't touch the earth, they lose tremendous amounts of bone density.
Mm.
You see, okay, so on the bottom of the foot, there's a point right in the middle of the foot. It's an acupuncture point.
Okay.
It's called K1, it's a kidney point, and it connects into the kidneys. And what we do is we pull energy out of the earth. We pull energy up. So we want to stay connected. That's why if you spend a lot of your time on planes, you age faster because you're not connected into the earth.
Yeah.
And so there's different techniques of grounding. How about just, you know, standing barefoot in the grass? That's like the simplest way of grounding.
Yeah.
And doing that. So we pull down energy, but we also pull down energy from the sky.
Mm.
And so the energy that comes of the earth, the color is like a golden yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy that comes down the sky is, you can see, either think of it as white or purple, one of the two. And some of the beginning breath work, it's, you know, it's called pull down the heavens is the name of it. You're pulling up energy from the earth, inhaling, flipping your hands, and then pulling down the energy and then mixing them in your lower abdomen. And we call that the Dantian. That's where you store all the chi. All the energy is like in your Dantian and in your kidneys, that whole area right in the middle. That's the safe. That's your bank account. Where you put all the chi and all the energy into your bank account. And I always advise, like, keep filling up your bank account, because you're going to spend it and you're going to need it.
Yeah.
And it's your energetic bank account. We all understand the currency bank account, whatever country we live in, but you got this chi bank account. And the good news is that it's always available to get. You got to do the work. Mm. You do have to, you got to work. If you want to fill up your bank account, you got to work. There's no ways around that.
Yeah.
But the good news is you just have to do it. You do a whole series of breathing exercises. And we do all the, you know, just even the universal, all these breathing exercises do help fill up the energetic bank account.
I'm conscious of our time, but you've got my brain going now. So I'm going to ask you before we talk about breath space, I just need to go, you've just got me in another direction now. Are you familiar with these people that are kind of, I don't know if they're like chi masters, what they can create electric with their hands, where they can electrocute you a little bit. And I've also seen videos online where people are able to create fire with paper with their hands. Have you got any experience with that, or seen any of that, or is that not real?
No, you know what? It's a good question. There's a lot of chi parlor tricks that you can do. And sure, some of it will be real and some of it will be a charlatan, like just like anything. I don't personally, I'm thinking if I know anybody or have seen like the creating the fire, I don't know that I've seen it live, but it also makes sense. And even in theory, it does make sense. However, at the same time, that's just a parlor trick.
Mm.
What's far more difficult is use the chi and the chi practices to raise a family and have a good life. Okay. And have happiness and help other people.
Yeah.
That's the real work. you know, the hey, I can, because there's all even in sword, there's all types of parlor tricks you do. You cut out a candle with the sword and you cut things in two, and that stuff is all fun to do, but that's not where the real mastery lies. You know, the real mastery lies in your life, and how do you live your life? Who are the people you affect? And who are the people that you touch? And can you ascend yourself and help others ascend?
Yeah.
And whatever that means, that can mean a lot. There's a lot of different ways to ascend. There's a lot of different paths up the mountain.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. And you're right. As raising a family, that's not a quick thing, is it? You got to do that properly. So tell me about breath space then. What are you thinking about there? Cause we're trying to not go into too much detail about it, I guess, on this podcast, but we're trying to get people's appetite a little bit wet, because this will probably be the first one that goes out where we've even mentioned it anywhere on the podcast.
Yeah, well, and that's how you and I met.
Yes.
And the reason we're having this conversation
is from
Breath Space. So it's an app that's coming soon. And it's the kind of like the one stop for breathing.
Yeah.
And you'll have all types of high level teachers and master teachers that are all going to be in one place. And it's kind of amazing. I mean, the teachers that are on it are fantastic. Please add to that. What would you add?
Well, I would say, for me, what's exciting is, it's a place where there's instructors, and it's not just like breath bubbles, you know, it's, or animations. There's going to be real humans like us presenting and talking and sharing, and there's ways to go live. I don't know. I just got really excited when I first spoke to Josh, the COO, and he explained the vision for it. I was like, oh, that sounds really freaking cool, you know. And it's a place where you go and you know what you're getting. You're going to go there for breath work. And what's exciting to me is you might go there for, say, your stuff, but then you might discover me or vice versa or somebody else. And already, as somebody that hasn't, you know, is on the app as an instructor, just even having this conversation with you has been so freaking cool, because I'd not heard of you until recently. Like, this is amazing. And everything, and you've got my brain going crazy after today. So I will definitely be clicking on your videos on the Breath Space app and watching some of your stuff on there. So so I think for people watching this right now, there will be a link at some point down below so you can go and click and register for the app. It's like I said, it's 9th of September right now. We're hoping to do something at the end of this month. But, you know, with all great tech things, they sometimes take a little bit longer than we hope they will. But I'll be on there. Jason's going to be on there. There's going to be a lot of other very, very cool, professional, beautiful breathwork instructors on there. And I think it's an exciting time for breath.
Well, and we're in very unique times, because if you go back not that long ago, it was very hard to access this information. And you would have to sit in the temple steps and wait and hope to be let in. And then you'd clean for a couple years before you would learn any of the secrets. And maybe you just learn a horse stance, or you learn like one breathing exercise. And so it was a very slow testing process. Ultimately, in terms of transformation, there's no substitute for direct transmission. It's the teacher and it's the student, and something magical happens when you're in, you know, you're just, when you're in with somebody else. And the modern technology has allowed us to do all types of things that you can get this information on your phone.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy that you can have that. Now, the interesting thing is in one way it's easier because it's more accessible. In one way, there's a challenge because, well, if it's on your phone, you might not do it because you have all these other distractions on your phone. Come join us in the mountain. You're going to do it.
Yeah,
you're actually gonna be forced to do it. But in one app, you can have just a lot of access. And see, and one of the problems with a lot of the, let's use YouTube, and I love YouTube. I learn all types of stuff on YouTube. One of the problems with it is things are nonlinear. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get a little bit of here. It's like a buffet.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of here, a little bit of there, a little bit of this, as opposed to going through like a linear A to B to C process in transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get that on the Breath Space app from A to B to C, and it's in one place for everything. So yes, I'm very excited about it too.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, fantastic. Jason, if people want to connect with you outside of Breath Space, where do we send them? Where can they go?
Well, you can go onto the Zen Piano site, and we have, you know, different meditations there and the music there. I mean, you can find me, you can look me up on Spotify and Amazon and all that. You can go to Zen Wellness. We have a zenwellness.us site, and those are probably the best two spaces to find me.
Super. Brilliant. All right, people. So check those links down below. I hope to come and spend some time with you in the mountains maybe one day. I didn't even know that existed, so I want to go and do that. So hopefully we'll meet in the flesh one day.
That would be great. I think you'll really like coming out to the desert. The energy is it's almost the opposite of England. Ooh. Just it's dry and it's desert. We train a lot of people from your area. Love coming out.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's that yin and yang thing, I'm sure, isn't it? It's like all rainy and wet here, and obviously the opposite. Cool, man. Well, thank you very much for your time. That's been a real pleasure. I can't believe how quickly that's just gone. So we're gonna have to maybe jump onto part two at some point, but until next time. Oh, we were gonna do an exercise. You still want to do something? How's your time
looking?
We can
do it if we don't mind doing 3 minutes, a little 3 minutes.
Oh, please, let's see us off with a bit of that. Okay. What I'll do, I'm going to put you on as the main thing, so I'm hidden now, and I'll go on mute, and over to you to close us off.
Okay, so here is a little 3 minute, and this was just a little percussion track I scored to do these exercises. So let's see here. Can you hear that okay? Did you hear the music there okay?
Yes.
Okay, so let's do it. So shoulders relaxed. This is 3 minutes. Inhale. Exhale. Again, inhale, exhale. Now we're going to go twice as fast, primal breath. Here we go. Inhale, exhale, in, release. This is the pace. In, exhale. So keep this rhythm, flow with the breath. If you can fill up your lower abdomen, in, release, a couple more. Inhale. Now exhale all the way. Don't breathe in again. Keep breathing out. Now hold the exhalation. Don't breathe in. Drop your shoulders. Wiggle your toes. Smile. Almost there. Lower abdomen is tight. Now inhale. Hold the inhalation. So the mastery here is let your shoulders completely drop, face is relaxed, and your lower abdomen is just a little tight. Exhale. Round two. Inhale. Exhale. In. Release. Now this is the pace again. You're breathing in through your nose. You can breathe out through your mouth or your nose, whatever feels best. But we want to pump the chi, the prana, the life. Big breath in, exhale, keep exhaling all the way. Okay, this is the last round. Hold the exhalation. Shoulders drop. Smile. Lower abdomen is tight. Put your mind right in your lower abdomen. Almost there. Okay, big breath in. And then exhale all the way. And that's 3 minutes.
That's really nice. I really like that. Thank you. That was lovely.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing what you can do in three focus.
3 minutes. And it's crazy. I forget all the time. You can change your state so quickly. So quickly.
And that's why I started writing all the music for it. You know, I put together all these choreographed, hey, you got 3 minutes. Hey, you got 5 minutes. There's a baseball team out here, a professional team. I won't say which team, but they use all of these breathings. I put together a whole series of audio teachings for them. They just listen them to their earbuds and they do them.
Fantastic. Beautiful. Jason, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. I look forward to being a colleague of yours on Breath Space. And I hope we continue to stay connected. Any parting words from yourself?
Mastery is not to be found in perfection. It's to be found in presence. And so whether it's breathing or whatever you're doing, it's when you come into the now, you come into the presence. Ah, that's ultimately going to be mastery.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Everyone, thank you for watching. Cheers.
And thank you for having me, Michael.
Oh, my pleasure. Cheers. Cheers. Thank you all. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. I need you to do just one thing for me. If you got any value from the episode, please click on the link in the show notes or down below in the video description and go on over to the Breath Source. Come and join me on the Breath Source app. Me and all these other wonderful breathwork instructors, you can get started for free today. We've put our life, our heart, our soul into this app. There's retreats in there you can go on. There's teacher training. There's every breathing exercise you can think of, all taught by their own breathwork instructors with our own flavors and modalities and training and experiences. Come for me and find Jesse or find Kat or find Travis or find one of these wonderful human beings in there and come and play with the breath with us. So the link is down below. I hope to see you on there. This podcast, The Breathcast, is also in there. Ed Harold's Life with Breath podcast is also in there as well. So we want to make a place for you where you can find our breathing exercises that are on YouTube, as well as new stuff, as well as live stuff, as well as new breath friends, a real community, a real hub for breathing. So I'm so excited about this. I cannot wait to see you in the app. The link is down below. And I will see you over on the Breath Source in 2 seconds. I'm going to hold my breath and I'm going to wait for you. Go, click on the link. Have you clicked it yet? Hurry up. Please. See you on the Breath Source. Cheers.